It's a trap.
Hello and welcome to episode number 183 of Radio TCX, your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy. I'm Tim Dugan, and I'm joined by my two co-hosts, Carson Ray.
Hey everybody, it's a great day to talk about X-Wing.
And John McDermott.
Hello everybody.
This week we're going to do a little focus here on what's good in X-Wing right now. We just saw the release of Wave 5. It's still a little too early to tell how that's going to impact the game going forward. I guess maybe we'll speculate a little bit, but more so we wanted to focus on what are the trends we're seeing in the game right now.
Sure. So it's a good idea as we're going into the fall here and getting ready for Worlds to kind of have an idea of what's good and what's out there right now, to hopefully give you a little bit of information to kind of prepare for what to see at some of the competitive formats here in the next couple weeks.
And we're also going to talk a little bit about the direction the game's gone design-wise with one of our a question we're going to throw at each other here at the end. So it should be a pretty good episode, so let's get into it. All right, so I wanted to start this episode off with a topic that I think is on all of our minds. Carson, can you explain why you got tabled at the Griffin Games Hyperspace trial this past weekend?
Sure. Yeah, big shout out to Rob Beals, who tabled me in round three of the Hyperspace trial. Now, as to the why that happened, I'm not sure. I kind of blocked most of it out, I think. But most of it, I think, is I made quite a few dumb mistakes during that game.
As opposed to the smart mistakes you usually make.
Yeah, no, I love making smart mistakes. I flew a full health Nian off the board and... forgot my S foils were open, so I couldn't coordinate, which put Jess on a rock. So a lot
Your
of good
North
things
American
there.
Champion, everyone, uh-huh. Carson Ray.
Everyone has an off game every now and then, and and sometimes I make some dumb mistakes, and sometimes many dumb mistakes all converge into one game. And that's sort of what happened there.
Let's hope we got him out of your system, because you're really our best chance at a TCX World Champion in a few weeks here. So got to get more practice in. And
it's great to have that happen now. Got a month to figure things out beforehand.
Well, apart from Carson's crushing defeat there, interesting stuff's been happening in X-Wing recently. We've seen some trends change even just from Gen Con. Which was at the start of August. We've seen some pretty big swings in the metagame so far. So today we're going to chat a little bit about the trends we're seeing, what's good in X-Wing right now. And I think the first one is one that has surprised me a fair bit, because Separatists did not see a lot of representation at Gen Con. I think the day two or the day one B qualifier had three Separatist lists total. One of which was Paul Nelson, Minnesota local. Now we're seeing Separatists do really well, even up into the cut rounds here, with lots of Separatist swarms performing very well right now. Was this surprising to you guys?
No, this is something that's kind of been slowly climbing. The Separatists got a lot of good updates in the past points change. Just the reworking of the Vultures points really gave them a lot more options. And the addition of the Hyenas really just did a bunch for these guys. Those Hyenas are really the toolbox ship of the faction. They can kind of fill whatever role you need very efficiently. So it allows these 6, 7, or 8 ship lists to really, have a lot of options. I really like the bombers providing the Dark One probe droids. These are an incredible value that really become more valuable the more ships you have in your list. Because those free target locks you get in the opening turns, the more Vultures or other ships you have with target lock and all the calculates they can want going into those first attacks, even if you don't have munitions, that's still really powerful offense.
Well, and I think, one thing that did boost the faction with the release of the Hyena was the fact that these things can carry tactical relays. So you have a cheaper outlet for getting a tactical relay on there, so you can, reserve those calculate tokens with, Kraken or whatever. So having that cheaper option means you don't have to bring a more expensive carrier that can be quickly picked apart. Here, people have to shoot at yet another inexpensive ship that doesn't hurt your efficiency too much. And it's probably going to take, maybe 3 shots to kill a Hyena anyway.
it's nice to see the other prequel faction kind of come into the light here, because I feel like when they were first released, the Republic was pretty good, pretty much right out of the gate, and they've continued to perform pretty well. And I don't think at first the Separatists could really hold a candle to them, so it's nice to see them performing well, you know, a couple months after release.
Right. I mean, there was the double infiltrator, but that was kind of the opposite of what the faction should be doing, and so now they're kind of right on point. You know, this is the premier swarm efficiency faction, and it's really showing. What is cool is they, you know, they got a new tool piece this past week, the Nantex fighter, you know, which does provide a pretty new effect that I think they're pretty excited about, getting some tractor effects, you know, reducing your opponent's agility. You know, the more ships you have firing on that target, you know, the more value you're going to get out of it. The tough part about that, though, is the cost of these Nantexes. You know, how many ships are you going to lose when you include one?
I mean, if you want to, you know, get a good Nantex out there that's going to be able to throw around these tractor tokens, you're going to pay a pretty decent cost there, which, you know, given the faction has so many cheap ship options, a loaded out like Sunfac in a Nantex is going to cost you like in the mid-70s, whereas that can get you basically, what, 4 of the Vulture-class droids? So it's kind of a hard trade-off there for one ship with 4 hit points versus just 4 smaller ships.
Right. I mean, you can still fit, you know, a decent amount of Vultures with Sunfac and Ensnare, but, you know, that's kind of all you're doing. You know, you lose out on the probe droids, the relay.
Well, I mean, it's a little too early to tell, too. But I before, you know, we saw the swarms doing really well for Separatists, I feel like this would have been the ship that the faction needed. Because where they really did suffer was in pilot skill options. They had a pilot skill 5, you know, in the Sith Infiltrator. But you're not really leveraging the 5 for repositioning there. Maybe a little bit. But this opened them up. So now they have the, obviously, Sunfac is a Initiative 6 pilot. So real AC. Kind of does the opposite of what the faction was doing up to this point. But, you know, now that I'm seeing so many Vultures and Hyenas doing well, I don't really know if the faction needs Sunfac, right? Like, they're doing fine on their own without that.
Right. I saw plenty of players this weekend do just fine without any Nantexes. You know, just the base Separatist Swarm is really solid.
Well, and if you're going to invest that many points into something, I feel like, you know, we've seen, like, the Dooku and Vultures do really well. Because Dooku's got all those tricks. He can PS up to 7 with heightened perception, and he's got the tractor beam and all that. So I feel like that's just a better option right now for the points than trying to pour a bunch of stuff into Sunfac.
Well, right, and if you, I like how we all pronounce Sunfac differently. I think I pronounce it different every time I say it, so until I hear an official declaration, expect that from us. But anyway, I think one of the harder parts for it is you're really susceptible to dice variance if you just invest all those points into Sun, because, you know, 4 hull, 3 agility, and then maybe just a focus token on defense, you're really depending on arc dodging, but if you line up in a couple firing arcs and you get some bad variance, that's it. And at that point, you probably want to invest either in a bunch more ships to get hit points that way, or in one sturdier ship.
Mm-hmm.
So we know Separatists are doing great, but other factions have interesting options now, too. One big change is we're seeing Finn all over the place in the Resistance transport pod.
Yeah, and Finn is pretty good when everyone besides me flies him. You know, he's just an incredibly efficient ship. You know, 29 points, well, 30, because you're always going to take heroic. And then, you know, you can pay a bit more points and give him more focus tokens, you know, with Perceptive Copilot. Maybe go really spendy and get a pattern analyzer, so every turn you have focus tokens. But that ability to add blanks and reroll it with heroic, or just add focuses, which become, you know, just guaranteed results when you have all those focus tokens, is really powerful. And he comes in a price point, you know, less than a T-70, but really has, you know, the offense and survivability of those T-70s, which is quite powerful. And what he really does is he frees up points for the rest of your list. So you can have, you know, some really strong options in a 4-ship resistance build.
Well, and he's interesting, too, because I think he brought some more options to the resistance, because I think pre-Finn, pre-resistance transport, 4 T-70s was a pretty solid build for efficiency, but I think Finn has really upset that balance where he's so inexpensive now, especially if you don't load him out very much. But his output is similar, you know, damage wise in a lot of cases to what a T-70 can do, so that you can invest those points in the other ships either for more, you know, initiative options or more upgrades. So there's a lot, you know, he's opened up a lot of space and resistance for, you know, using those other T-70s, loading them out a little bit more. So you're not just running straight efficiency like, you know, three experts in Jess.
Right. Now, his weakness is definitely his mobility. He does not have a very good dial to start with. You know, there's not many maneuver options. A lot of them are red, and very few of them are blue. So that's a bad start. And then as far as repositioning action goes, he just has a red barrel roll. This is a pretty slow, clunky ship. So if you land in its arc, you know, it's going to do a lot of impact. But once you get past it, it is really tough for Finn to stay in the fight and be relevant.
But I think that's where he's an interesting design too, because on the surface, he doesn't have great action options. He has a pretty terrible dial. The fact that he's so reliable on defense, where, you know, he could add the, you know, focus result on defense, take the strain, but it's going to disappear and have no effect before it actually would do anything, means you have pretty reliable defense. So he is relatively hard to kill for a 4-hit point ship. And the fact that his offensive output can be so reliable means your opponent can't ignore him. Because, you know, a pretty well loaded out Finn with Perceptive Copilot, Heroic, and Pattern Analyzer is only 43 points. So he can put out 2 attack dice plus a focus result if he wants that he can modify. That's pretty good damage output. You know, adding a focus result to 2 attack dice is better than just rolling 3 attack dice, obviously, because you have a guaranteed usable result. So design-wise, you're really putting the emphasis on his output there. Sure, you have to compensate a little bit by positioning him well and not putting yourself in a position where you have to use the red barrel roll or you don't have any good maneuver options. That's a little bit of a learning curve. But the fact that he's so inexpensive, even loaded out pretty well, I think he's really brought the resistance back up to the forefront of things. It's not the best faction, but it's fighting back again.
Right. I mean, it really gives them the tools to, you know, handle the Separatist efficiency. You gotta answer back with some efficiency of your own.
I mean, I feel like that's to be expected because, remember, he is a big deal.
He is. He's in a tiny ship, but it's a big deal.
I am part of the resistance. This is what we look like. Others look different. All right, though, the real star of the show, though, the faction that won Carson the North American Championship, though, did he earn it? I heard he got tabled recently. Anyway, the Republic is doing very well right now, and a lot of good ship options, right? Not just the high ground stuff that we were looking at before. Obviously, Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Rick are still doing pretty good, but there's actually some pretty decent options in the Jedi for this faction.
Right. I mean, I saw a lot of the Obi-Wan with the calibrated laser targeting. Just a really good ship. Obi-Wan has the mobility to, you know, get that bullseye lined up and the ability to, you know, make that added focus result really matter. But there's a lot of other good options that work pretty well too.
I feel like in general we've been seeing Jedi do pretty well. Some of them have pretty cool abilities. Obviously Anakin is one of the highest performers and Obi-Wan as well. But there's a splattering here and there of some of the other pilots like Plo Koon and Luminara and Mace Windu, we've seen also doing well.
Yeah, and this was not something I was actually expecting here. I've been a little not so hot on Plo Koon, first of all, because he's only got the 2 force rating, so even though he's at 5, his ability's not amazing. It's cool to pass tokens, and I think we've starting to see scenarios now where you can run like Obi-Wan, Plo, and Rick, and be able to use Plo's ability to get really strong modification with the others. But it's just cool to see that there are Jedi beyond Obi-Wan and Anakin that can do well, because I've seen a lot of great combinations. You can run some cheaper non-7B variants that have multiple Jedi in the other sprite. Or the one I'm looking at right now is just Obi-Wan, Plo, and Rick, where you have pretty good offensive output across all three of those ships. And they're all at 5, so you know you can move in whatever order you want.
Yeah, I think my personal favorite of these is Mace Windu right now. I think, you know, that lower initiative at 4 doesn't really matter too much. And gosh, that ability to get force back is just really good. And, you know, the ether sprites just have really good red maneuvers. The 2 sloops and the 4 and 5K turns, they work really well.
Yeah, Mace able to get a force back after he performs one of those red maneuvers. Yeah, they've got some really good options here. And I think you're right, Carson, because I think the four lower pilot skills don't matter as much when we're in like the four or five range now, since we're seeing such a push towards efficiency in the game. So a lot of those ships are going to fall at the three or below initiative threshold. Being at four seems just fine right now. You don't want to pay too much for initiative. You'd rather actually have the modification from Mace's three force charges, just because that's going to give you more reliable defense over time, and it's going to make sure you can kill all those dumb Separatist ships before they get to shoot.
Right. Now, of course, come November, after I get my hands on that fancy Plo Koon model, that will be the only Jedi I'll be flying for a while. So I'm going to play the other ones now and then switch to Plo.
Hopefully there'll be a cool way where you can run just all three paint scheme variants. So you can run the Anakin Anakin Ether Sprite, and then the classic Jedi Starfighter, and then the Plo Koon option.
I'm sure you can. They might all have to be calibrated laser, but that's fine.
But Jedi aren't the only thing that the Republic has going on right now. They actually have a pretty big tool set that's been expanded yet again with the BTLB Y-Wing.
Yeah, the big boy Y-Wing. This model's awesome, right?
It's super cool. So thick.
And it's got a pretty sweet ship ability, too, where if it's not already like suffered critical damage, it can negate a crit. Of course, if it is a naturally rolled crit, it can negate it.
Yeah, so so this is an interesting point, too. Obviously, the ship ability lets you, when your opponent is attacking, if they roll a crit, since you're the defender, you'll modify first, so you'll change the crit down to a hit first, and then they could modify, so if they have Fifth Brother or something that lets them generate a crit, like Marksmanship, that won't be able to, you know, the ship ability won't be able to prevent that. But even still, it's kind of a two-part combo, because the ship is actually already better on hit points than the classic Rebel Y-Wing or the Scum Y-Wing, where you have three shields and five hull instead of two shields and six hull. And then you're kind of almost effectively getting additional shields circumstantially with that ship ability, where you know you can turn crit damage into regular damage, which can be really important, especially if you're going to invest a little bit in these Y-Wings to get some turrets or use broadside or anything.
Right, well, and critical effects just play such a dynamic role in X-Wing right now. I feel like a lot of games are decided when one ship takes an unfortunate crit. And so, you know, just any minor protection against that, I think, is really strong. You know, I think that's an ability people are going to underrate.
Well, and the cost of the Y-Wings, too, is pretty inexpensive, even compared to the Rebel variant, where I think the lowest Rebel Y-Wing right now is 31 points. And then the Initiative 2 Republic Y-Wing is only 33, so it's a very small increase, and you get a lot of payoff for that. Plus, it's in a faction that's got some better, I think, better options right now competitively. And I just think that this ship kind of fills out the toolset of the Republic, which is really fascinating, because this is, you know, one of the newest factions of the game, and yet it's already got a pretty wide selection across point values of ships you can include in the list, so... You know, you start down now at the VT Torrent, then you go up to Y-Wing, and then you can go up to, you know, the Ark and the Jedi Starfighters. The real question I have right now, though, for you two is there a good reason to run a non-Ether Sprite Anakin? So now we have three options for Anakin. He's obviously in the Ether Sprite Jedi Starfighter, but he's also in the N1 Starfighter and the new BTLB Y-Wing. Is there a reason you don't want to run this Jedi version and run these other versions instead?
Well, I mean, just looking at the Naboo fighter version of Anakin, it's Initiative 4, it has less force, but it also comes in 20 points cheaper than his other renditions. And the Naboo starfighter isn't a terrible carrier for some kind of torpedo. And the ability is kind of cool. You get that pre-movement barrel roll. I think there's a place for Naboo starfighter Anakin. I haven't used him yet, but I think we could definitely see it going forward in the future.
Yeah, I actually think the Naboo one is pretty good. You know, you can get, you know, the double mod torpedo off pretty well for not too much points. Yeah, you only have the one force, but that's fine. The Y-Wing Anakin, that's a tougher sell. I was a little hesitant, you know, seeing that, because Initiative 6 that could get off a really powerful torpedo could have been really impactful. But the price point, I think, is a little too high.
Oh, yeah. He's obscenely expensive.
I mean, the Y-Wings, you know, it's got a good ability to keep it alive a little bit longer, but, you know, 8 hit points and 1 agility, it doesn't matter how much force you have. That thing's going to go down pretty quickly if someone wants to. And so that's a lot of points to sink into something that's going to be a liability to keep alive. Whereas, you know, the Aether Sprite's going to cost about the same. And, you know, the offense isn't going to be that much lower. And the survivability is much greater.
I think it exists in kind of a weird design place, right? Where they don't want to make it too cheap, because if it's too cheap, it's got 3/4. It could throw out an Initiative 6 torpedo, which is pretty devastating. So if it's too inexpensive, everyone's going to run it. And then at the same time, it's easy enough to kill where, you know, if you make it too expensive, people are not going to want to invest, you know, 60 points before any upgrades in Anakin. Because just at base 62, you would not want to run this thing.
Right. I mean, it needs some upgrades, and then it's going to cost pretty similar to a 7B Anakin.
And at that point, you might as well just be running the more mobile variant, right?
Right. I do like that they're giving us these tough choices, though, in list buildings, like, you know, because it is the same pilot, so you only can include one. So you do really have to make sure, you know, you're doing the best choice and the best choice for your list, because, you know, I think the Aether Sprite Anakin is the best one, but, you know, there is times where I want that Naboo, you know, because it, you know, it fills a certain role and it frees up a lot of points for the rest of my squad.
Meanwhile, we now have three versions of Oddball and none of them are good.
That is very true.
Hey, I think the Y-Wing is probably the closest to being good.
But is it because it's Oddball or because it's a Y-Wing?
Well, I think the Y-Wing appreciates the target lock the most.
That's okay. I guess I can see that argument. How many points is that at, though? Let me look it up here.
I got a fancy Oddball card that I really would like to use someday.
So Oddball at Initiative 6 in the Y-Wing is 44 points. And that's pre any upgrade loadouts there. Man, they just keep trying to push this ship on us, and it's just not doing anything for me. Like, I am 0% interested.
All right, we should stop talking about Oddball and start talking about something that's actually good.
I guess we've already dedicated more time to him than he deserves. The last thing I wanted to talk about here, too, is, and this is something, obviously, Carson, you experienced firsthand at Gen Con, but Inquisitors and the Grand Inquisitor are still doing pretty well. They're popping up in top cuts. We've seen a decent number of big European tournaments recently and seen several Inquisitors break through and perform pretty well.
Right. Well, and now they're hyperspace legal, so now you'll see them everywhere. Whatever tournament you're going to, there'll probably be some Inquisitors. You know, it's just a really good ship, you know, that you have the generic Inquisitor and the Grand Inquisitor, both really powerful. You know, the generic one is just super efficient and really difficult to remove from the table. Grand Inquisitor, you know, same thing, a little bit more expensive, can hit a little harder, it has that initiative. Just really solid role players for the Empire, and, you know, it just opens up a lot of options for them, because if they can take these, you know, efficient platforms, then they can fill out the rest of their squad with, you know, some of the more expensive but heavier hitters like Vader or something.
They're also a pretty good platform for passive sensors too. Like if you're loading out an Inquisitor with those concussion missiles, throw passive sensors on there. So even if you're moving in before your opponent does, you can still get that target lock at the start of the engagement phase, which is pretty cool.
Right, you know, especially in hyperspace where you don't have access to Gendin or other ways to give them those early target locks, I really like the passive sensors, Inquisitors.
I would expect, honestly, to see Inquisitors do very well in hyperspace. I think they're well-suited for that environment with so few options out there otherwise. You know, more limited pool than extended is. All right, time for the question of the week, guys. So I threw this one at you earlier. I just want to get your thoughts on it. So one of the things I've noticed in X-Wing 2nd Edition, one of the most dramatic gameplay changes I've seen, is that offense is dramatically less reliable in 2nd Edition. So late 1st Edition, we got to the point where offense was pretty consistent. There was a lot of high damage output ships where you expected them to pretty much get, you know, max hits on their attacks. Second edition, not so much. We're a lot more, I feel like, a lot more vulnerable to the variance of the dice. So my question is, do you think X-Wing 2nd Edition would benefit from more reliable dice modification, either in the form of ships that can improve their offense more reliably or upgrade cards?
This is a tough one because the inconsistency, you know, was sort of an appeal for 2nd Edition, where I think, you know, we went too far in 1st Edition and... you know, we rolled the dice, but it didn't really matter what we rolled. We could just change everything with the amount of modifications we had. And so I don't ever really want to go back to that point. I want there to be some variance. I think that makes for more exciting gameplay. You know, could we use a little bit more? Maybe, but I'm not really sure where that line is. Because defense of modification is also crazy inconsistent. You know, outside of the force, there is really not much protection. You know, you have elusive and maybe lone wolf, right?
Yeah, that's about your best option.
Most ships can't get evade tokens. You have a focus and maybe the ability to reroll one green die. And that's about the best that most ships can do. So, you know, if you up offensive modification, I think you have to up the defensive modification too.
I think my hard answer to this question is no. And for some of the same reasons Carson thinks are relevant, you know, like you said, if you have to up offensive, then you have to up defensive. And I think that could quickly spiral out of control. And we would just get to a point where, you know, you're maybe getting max hits, but you're also just getting max evades. And I don't really want to see that because, you know, with the less reliable modification for dice, it puts the onus on other elements of the game, such as positioning or using the obstacles to your advantage. And I like having that feeling and challenge in second edition. Because like you said, at the end of first edition, it was like degenerate levels of offensive modifications.
So I get where you're coming from, John. So my biggest concern, and I'm wondering if increasing the reliability of offensive modification would help this, is we've talked about this before. A lot of games are going to time in second edition, and I feel like the game would benefit from something that would increase aggression or encourage people to engage. Because I think X-Wing games generally are more fun when they actually play to completion, where, you know, either, you know, it's well decided by an imbalance in ships. We're not just winning by, you know, margins of 10 or 12 points, or until one player is completely destroyed. I think that is the way I'd like to see the game trend. I'm getting pretty tired of this game where it's an entirely different environment where you have to go like, all right, so I'm going to do 2 damage here, get this ship to half, then run away, regen, and that'll get me up by 7 points so that I'll be able to win when time comes in 4 minutes or what, you know. I'd like to see more aggressive play encouraged. Do you think there'd be other ways to do this outside of, you know, increasing the reliability of modification?
I don't know.
That's fair. Do you agree with my premise, at least, that we should encourage aggression in the game?
I think so, yes. I mean, I really don't like the regenerating and running away at time. I don't like that at all, but I also don't like, you know, the hypothetical of, you know, everything's very aggressive and, like that can lead to very variance games that are over in 20 minutes. And I'm not sure what happened, but all the ships are destroyed. And so you don't really have time to make, you know, meaningful maneuver choices at that point.
I mean, yeah, I guess I should be clear. I don't want X-Wing games to just be jousts where we fly all our ships at each other and blow them up. I want there to still be meaningful decisions. I just would like it to shift away from this really defensive play that, you know, assumes that you need to use the whole clock and get down to the end game where you're just up by points and then run away. John, you've been playing a lot of Imperial Aces recently. Obviously, they don't have regen, but you do need to be a little bit more defensive, right? Do you feel like your games could be more aggressive, or do you think they're interesting as is?
This one's tough for me specifically, because I think I tend to play my Aces a little bit more aggressively than some other Ace players do.
You kind of do with Imperials too, since you don't have regen, right? You do have to take some pieces off.
Right, and I think, and I guess this kind of loops back to your point about trying to emphasize aggressive play, it really boils down to player style. So, I mean, I think you could come out with as much as you want to try to, you know, emphasize aggressive play, but at the end of the day, a player is going to do what they want to do, regardless, I think, of what the game is trying to get them to do, if that makes sense. So, yeah, I guess that's kind of how I feel.
Because I think one of the points of concern too is that a lot of people have, you know, regeneration was a huge problem in first edition since it was effectively infinite on a lot of the platforms that used it. Here we do see charge counter caps, but even still, it's a very powerful mechanic. maybe one of my fears is if it's perceived that regen is causing problems for the game and forcing players to play defensively, if we just dramatically up the cost of regen, suddenly we'll just see a huge shift over back towards efficiency and swarm play, which kind of lends itself more to those games where you engage head on and just basically become a joust, and there's a lot less interesting gameplay decisions to be made.
I mean, so we complain about the point scoring thing, but I think that's kind of a like minor setback to what is, you know, really good gameplay that we have right now. I mean, there is a lot of emphasis on, you know, setting the right maneuvers, putting your ships in the right spot, you know, having a good game plan. You know, maybe the obstacles don't matter as much right now, but maybe we're working towards that. And so, you know, the offense inconsistency, I think, is kind of a minor issue. And I wouldn't want to restructure everything when I think most of it's working really well right now.
Yeah, I guess the fear would be you don't want to start the trend towards the way the game was, kind of that degenerate game state we saw at the end of first edition, where offense and defense were way too reliable and you didn't really get to make any meaningful gameplay decisions.
Right. I think these are minor gripes.
I think we've reached a pretty good balance point right now.
So before we go, we got some shout-outs. There's an upcoming Grand Championship in St. Louis, Missouri. This is part of the Warfare Weekend on November 8th and November 9th. You can register and find more details about it on warfareweekend.com. Fair spelled F-A-I-R-E. So go there and check it out. Also want to give a shout out to the Griffin Games Hyperspace Trial that happened last weekend. It was run by Logan Haas. Did a great job judging, keeping the event going smoothly. So shout out to Logan. And then shout out to Josiah Elliott, our champion, who won it with Vader, Suntir, and Duchess.
That's the list you're running, John.
It is. It's pretty good.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to facebook.com/RadioTCX and like our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy listening to the show, consider going on iTunes and leaving us a 5-star review saying what you liked and why you think others should listen.
If you want to support the show directly, please consider going on to patreon.com/RadioTCX and becoming a supporter of the show today. It really means so much to us.
Again, folks, thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week. It's a